This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents Edge Dancer by Brandon Sanderson. Read for you by Kate Redding.
One. Lift prepared to be awesome. She sprinted across an open field in northern Tashik, a little over a week's travel from Azimir. The place was overgrown with brown grass a foot or so high. The occasional trees were tall and twisty, with trunks that looked like they were made of interwoven vines, and branches that pointed upward more than out. They had some official name, but everyone she knew called them drop-deads because of their springy roots. In a storm, they'd fall over flat and just lie there. Afterward, they'd pop back up, like a rude gesture made at the passing winds. Lift's run startled a group of axe hinds who had been grazing nearby. The lean creatures leaped away on four legs with the two front claws pulled in close to the body. Good eating, those beasties. Barely any shell on them. But for once, Lift wasn't in the mood to eat. She was on the run.
Mistress!
Windle, her pet Voidbringer, called. He took the shape of a vine, growing along the ground beside her at superfast speed, matching her pace. He didn't have a face at the moment, but could speak anyway. Unfortunately.
Mistress, he pled. Can't we please just go back?
Nope. Lift became awesome. She drew on the stuff inside of her, the stuff that made her glow. She slicked the bottom of her feet with it and leaped into a skid. Suddenly the ground didn't rub against her at all. She slid as if on ice, whipping through the field. Grass startled all around her, curling as it yanked down into stone burrows that made it bow before her in a wave. She zipped along, wind pushing back her long black hair, tugging at the loose overshirt she wore atop her tighter brown undershirt, which she tucked into her loose-cuffed trousers. She slid and felt free, just her and the wind. A little wind spren, like a white ribbon in the air, started to follow her. Then she hit a rock. The stupid rock held firm. It was held in place by little tufts of moss that grew on the ground and stuck to things like stones, holding them down as shelter against the wind. Lift's foot flashed with pain, and she tumbled in the air, then hit the stone ground face first. Reflexively, she made her face awesome, so she kept right on going, skidding on her cheek until she hit a tree. She stopped there, finally. The tree slowly fell over, playing dead. It hit with a shivering sound of leaves and branches. Lift sat up, rubbing her face. She'd cut her foot, but her awesomeness plugged up the hole, healing it plenty quick. Her face didn't even hurt much. When a part of her was awesome, it didn't rub on what it touched. It just kind of glided. She still felt stupid.
Mistress,
Windle said, curling up to her. His vine looked like the type fancy people would grow on their buildings to hide up parts that didn't look rich enough, except he had bits of crystal growing out of him along the vine's length. They jutted out unexpectedly, like toenails on a face. When he moved, he didn't wiggle like an eel. He actually grew, leaving a long trail of vines behind him that would soon crystallize and decay into dust. Voidbringers were strange. He wound around himself in a circle, like rope coiling, and formed a small tower of vines. And then something grew from the top, a face that formed out of vines, leaves, and gemstones. The mouth worked as he spoke.
"Oh, mistress," he said, "can't we stop playing out here, please? We need to get back to Azamir."
"Go back?" Lift stood up. "We just escaped that place."
"Escaped? The palace? Mistress, you were an honored guest of the Emperor. You had everything you wanted, as much food, as much—"
"All lies," she declared, hands on hips. "To keep me from noticing the truth. They was going to eat me." Windle stammered. He wasn't so frightening for a void bringer. He must have been like the void bringer all the other ones made fun of for wearing silly hats. The one that would correct all the others and explain which fork they had to use when they sat down to consume human souls.
"Mistress," Windle said, "humans do not eat other humans. You were a guest."
"Yeah, but why? They gave me too much stuff."
"You saved the Emperor's life."
"That should have been good for a few days of freeloading," she said. "I once pulled a guy out of prison and he gave me 5 whole days in his den for free and a nice handkerchief, too. That was generous. The Azish letting me stay as long as I wanted?" She shook her head. "They wanted something. Only explanation. They was going to starve and eat me."
"But—"
Lift started running again. The cold stone, perforated by grass burrows, felt good on her toes and feet. No shoes. What good were shoes? In the palace, they'd started offering her heaps of shoes and nice clothing. Big, comfy coats and robes. Clothing you could get lost in. She'd liked wearing something soft for once. Then they'd started asking, why not take some lessons and learn to read? They were grateful for what she'd done for Gox, who was now Prime Akasix, a fancy title for their ruler. Because of her service, she could have tutors, they said. She could learn how to wear those clothes properly, learn how to read. It had started to consume her. If she'd stayed, how long would it have been before she wasn't Lift anymore? How long until she'd have been gobbled up, another girl left in her place? Similar face, but at the same time all new. She tried using her awesomeness again. In the palace, they had talked about the recovery of ancient powers, knights radiant, the binding of surges, natural forces. "I will remember those who have been forgotten." Lift slicked herself with power, then skidded across the ground a few feet before tumbling and rolling through the grass. She pounded her fist on the stones. Stupid ground. Stupid awesomeness. How was she supposed to stay standing when her feet were slipperier than if they'd been coated in oil? She should just go back to paddling around on her knees. It was so much easier. She could balance that way and use her hands to steer, like a little crab scooting around this way and that.
"They were elegant things of beauty," Darkness had said. "They could ride the thinnest rope, dance across rooftops, move like a ribbon on the wind."
Darkness, the shadow of a man who had chased her, had said those things in the palace, speaking of those who had long ago used powers like Lift's. Maybe he'd been lying. After all, he'd been preparing to murder her at the time. Then again, why lie? He'd treated her derisively, as if she were nothing, worthless. She set her jaw and stood up. Windle was still talking, but she ignored him, instead taking off across the deserted field, running as fast as she could, startling grass. She reached the top of a small hill, then jumped and coated her feet with power. She started slipping immediately. The air she pushed against when moving was holding her back. Lift hissed, then coated her entire self in power. She sliced through the wind, turning sideways as she skidded down the side of the hill. Air slid off her as if it couldn't find her. Even the sunlight seemed to melt off her skin. She was between places, here but not. No air, no ground, just pure motion. So fast that she reached grass before it had time to pull away. It flowed around her, its touch brushed aside by her power. Her skin started to glow, tendrils of smoky light rising from her. She laughed, reaching the bottom of the small hill. There she leaped some boulders and ran face first into another tree. The bubble of power around her popped. The tree toppled over, and for good measure, the two next to it decided to fall as well. Perhaps they thought they were missing out on something. Wendell found her grinning like a fool, staring up at the sun, spread out on the tree trunk with her arms interwoven with the branches, a single golden glory spren shaped like an orb, circling above her.
"Mistress," he said. "Oh, mistress, you were happy in the palace. I saw it in you."
She didn't reply.
"And the emperor," Wendell continued. "He'll miss you. You didn't even tell him you were going."
"I left him a note."
"A note? You learned to write?"
"Storms, no. I ate his dinner, right out from under the tray cover while they was preparing to bring it to him. Gox'll know what that means."
"I find that doubtful, mistress."
She climbed up from the fallen tree and stretched, then blew her hair out of her eyes. Maybe she could dance across rooftops, ride on ropes, or what was it? Make wind? Yeah, she could do that one for sure. She hopped off the tree and continued walking through the field. Unfortunately, her stomach had a few things to say about how much awesomeness she'd used. She ran on food, even more than most folks. She could draw some awesomeness from everything she ate, but once it was gone, she couldn't do anything incredible again until she'd had more to eat. Her stomach rumbled in complaint. She liked to imagine that it was cussing at her something awful, and she searched through her pockets. She'd run out of the food in her pack. She'd taken a lot this morning. But hadn't she found a sausage in the bottom before tossing the pack? Oh, right. She'd eaten that while watching those river spren a few hours ago. She dug in her pockets anyway, but only came out with a handkerchief that she'd used to wrap up a big stack of flatbread before stuffing it in her pack. She shoved part of the handkerchief into her mouth and started chewing.
"Mistress?" Wendell asked.
"May have grubs on it," she said around the handkerchief.
"You shouldn't have been surge binding so much."
He wound along on the ground beside her, leaving a trail of vines and crystals.
"And we should have stayed in the palace. Oh, how did this happen to me? I should be gardening right now. I had the most magnificent chairs."
"Chairs?" Lift asked, pausing.
"Yes, chairs."
Wendell wound up in a coil beside her, forming a face that tilted toward her at an angle off the top of the coil.
"While in Shadesmar, I had collected the most magnificent selection of the souls of chairs from your side. I cultivated them, grew them into grand crystals. I had some windstalls, a nice showbur, quite the collection of spoonbacks, even a throne or two."
"You gardened chairs?"
"Of course I gardened chairs," Wendell said.
His ribbon of vine leaped off the coil and followed her as she started walking again.
"What else would I garden?"
"Plants?"
"Plants? Well, we have them in Shadesmar, but I'm no pedestrian gardener. I'm an artist. Why, I was planning an entire exhibition of sofas when the ring chose me for this atrocious duty."
"Smuffle Grammage Fragnet Feud.
Would you take that out of your mouth?"
Wendell snapped. Lift did so. Wendell huffed. How a little vine thing huffed, Lift didn't know. but he did it all the time.
Now, what were you trying to say?
Gibberish, Lift said. I just wanted to see how you'd respond. She stuffed the other side of the handkerchief into her mouth and started sucking on it. They continued on with a sigh from Windle, who muttered about gardening and his pathetic life. He certainly was a strange void-bringer. Come to think of it, she'd never seen him act the least bit interested in consuming someone's soul. Maybe he was a vegetarian. They passed through a small forest, really just a corpse of trees, which was a strange term, since she never seemed to find any bodies in them. These weren't even drop-deads. Those tended to grow in small patches, but each apart from the others. These had branches that wound around one another as they grew, dense and intertwined to face the high storms. That was basically the way to do it, right? Everyone else, they wound their branches together, braced themselves. But Lift, she was a drop dead. Don't intertwine, don't get caught up, go your own way. Yes, that was definitely how she was. That was why she'd had to leave the palace, obviously. You couldn't live your life getting up and seeing the same things every day. You had to keep moving, otherwise people started to know who you were, and then they started to expect things from you. It was one stop from there to being gobbled up. She stopped right inside the trees, standing on a pathway that someone had cut and kept maintained. She looked backward, northward, toward Aesir.
"Is this about what happened to you?" Windle asked. "I don't know a lot about humans, but I believe it was natural, disconcerting though it might appear. You aren't wounded."
Lift shaded her eyes. The wrong things were changing. She was supposed to stay the same, and the world was supposed to change around her. She'd asked for that, hadn't she? Had she been lied to?
"Are we going back?"
Windle asked, hopeful. "No," Lift said. "Just saying goodbye." Lift shoved her hands in her pockets and turned around before continuing through the trees. 2. Yeddaw was one of those cities Lift had always meant to visit. It was in Tashik, a strange place even compared to Aesir. She'd always found everyone here too polite and reserved. They also wore clothing that made them hard to read. But everyone said that you had to see Yeddaw. It was the closest you could get to seeing Sisimalik's Dar, and considering that place had been a war zone for basically a billion years, she wasn't likely to ever get there. Standing with hands on hips, looking down at the city of Yeddaw, she found herself agreeing with what people said. This was a sight. The Azish liked to consider themselves grand, but they only plastered bronze or gold or something over all their buildings and pretended that was enough. What good did that do? It just reflected her own face at her, and she'd seen that too often to be impressed by it. No, this was impressive. A majestic city, cut out of the starving ground. She'd heard some of the fancy scribes in Aesir talk about it. They said it was a new city, created only 100 years back by hiring the Imperial Shardblades out of Aesir. Those didn't spend much time at war, but were instead used for making mines or cutting up rocks and stuff. Very practical. Like using the royal throne as a stool to reach something on the high shelf. She really shouldn't have gotten yelled at for that. Anyway, they'd used those shard blades here. This had once been a large, flat plain. Her vantage on a hilltop, though, let her make out hundreds of trenches cut in the stone. They interconnected, like a huge maze. Some of the trenches were wider than others, and they made a vague spiral toward the center, where a large mound-like building was the only part of the city that peaked up over the surface of the plain. Above, in the space between trenches, people worked fields. There were virtually no structures up there. Everything was down below, People lived in those trenches, which seemed to be 2 or 3 stories deep. How did they avoid being washed away in high storms? True, they'd cut large channels leading out from the city, ones nobody seemed to live in, so the water could escape. Still didn't seem safe, but it was pretty cool. She could hide really well in there. That was why she'd come, after all. To hide. Nothing else. No other reason. The city didn't have walls, but it did have a number of guard towers spaced around it. Her pathway led down from the hills and joined with a larger road, which eventually stopped in a line of people awaiting permission to get into the city.
"How on Roshar did they manage to cut away so much rock?"
Wendell said, forming a pile of vines beside her, a twisting column that took him high enough to be by her waist, face tilted toward the city. "Shard blades," Lift said.
"Oh, those."
He shifted uncomfortably, vines writhing and twisting about one another with a scrunching sound.
"Yes, those."
She folded her arms. "I should get me one of those, eh?" Wendell, strangely, groaned loudly. "I figure," she explained, "that darkness has one, right? He fought with one when he was trying to kill me and Gox, so I ought to find one."
"Yes," Wendell said. "You should just do that. Let us pop over to the market and pick up a legendary all-powerful weapon of myth and lore worth more than many kingdoms. I hear they sell them in bushels, following spring weather in the east."
"Shut it, Voidbringer." She eyed his tangle of a face. "You know something about shard blades, don't you?" The vines seemed to wilt. "You do. Out with it. What do you know?" He shook his vine head. "Tell me," Lift warned.
"It's forbidden. You must discover it on your own."
"That's what I'm doing. I'm discovering it. From you. Tell me, or I'll bite you."
"What?"
"I'll bite you," she said. "I'll gnaw on you, Voidbringer. You're vine, right? I eat plants, sometimes."
"Even assuming my crystals wouldn't break your teeth," Wendell said, "my mass would give you no sustenance. It would break down into dust."
"It's not about sustenance. It's about torture." Wendell, surprisingly, met her expression with his strange eyes grown from crystals.
"Honestly, mistress, I don't think you have it in you."
She growled at him and he wilted further, but didn't tell her the secret. Well, storms. It was good to see him have a backbone, or, well, the plant equivalent, whatever that was, back bark. "You're supposed to obey me," she said, shoving her hands in her pockets and heading along the path toward the city. "You ain't following the rules."
"I am indeed," he said with a huff. "You just don't know them. And I'll have you know that I am a gardener and not a soldier, so I'll not have you hitting people with me."
She stopped. "Why would I hit anyone with you?" He wilted so far he was practically shriveled. Lift sighed, then continued on her way, Wendell following. They merged with the larger road, turning toward the tower that was a gateway into the city.
"So," Wendell said as they passed a chull cart, "this is where we were going all along? This city cut into the ground?"
Lift nodded.
"You could have told me," Wendell said. "I've been worried we'll be caught outside in a storm."
"Why? It ain't raining anymore." The weeping, oddly, had stopped, then started again, then stopped again. It was acting downright strange, like regular weather, rather than the long, long, mild high storm it was supposed to be.
"I don't know," Wendell said. "Something is wrong, mistress. Something in the world. I can feel it.
Did you hear what the Alethi king wrote to the emperor about a new storm coming? Lift said. One that blows the wrong way?
Yes.
The noodles all called that silly.
Noodles?
The people who hang around Gox, talking to him all the time, telling him what to do and trying to get me to wear a robe.
The viziers of Aesir, head clerks of the Empire and advisors to the Prime.
Yeah, wavy arms and blubbering features, noodles. Anyway, they thought that angry guy,
High Prince Dalinar Kolin, de facto king of Alethkar and most powerful warlord in the world right now,
was making stuff up.
Maybe. But don't you feel something out there? Building?
A distant thunder, Lift whispered, looking westward past the city toward the far-off mountains. Or the way you feel after someone drops a pan and you see it falling and get ready for the clatter it will make when it hits.
So you do feel it?
Maybe, Lift said. The chul cart rolled past. Nobody paid any attention to her. They never did. And nobody could see Windel but her because she was special. Don't your Voidbringer friends know about this?
We're not. Lift. We're Spren. But my kind, cultivation Spren, are not very important. We don't have a kingdom or even cities of our own. We only moved to bond with you because the cryptics and the honor Spren and everyone were starting to move. Oh, we've jumped right into the sea of glass feet first, but we barely know what we're doing. Everyone who had any idea of how to accomplish all this died centuries ago.
He grew along the road beside her as they followed the chul cart, which rattled and shook as it bounced down the roadway.
Everything is wrong and nothing makes sense, Windel continued. Bonding to you was supposed to be more difficult than it was, I gather. Memories come to me fuzzily sometimes, but I do remember more and more. I didn't go through the trauma we all thought I'd endure. That might be because of your unique circumstances. But Mistress, listen to me when I say something big is coming. This was the wrong time to leave Aesir. We were secure there. We'll need security.
There isn't time to get back.
No, there probably isn't. At least we have shelter ahead.
Yeah, assuming darkness doesn't kill us.
Darkness? The Skybreaker who attacked in the palace and came very close to murdering you?
Yeah, Lift said. He's in the city. Didn't you hear me complaining that I needed a shard blade?
In the city. In Yeddaw? Where we're going right now?
Yep. The noodles have people watching for reports of him. A note came in right before we left, saying he'd been spotted in Yeddaw.
Wait.
Windel zipped forward, leaving a trail of vines and crystal behind. He grew up the back of the chul cart, curling onto its wood right in front of her. He made a face there, looking at her.
Is that why we left all of a sudden? Is that why we're here? Did you come chasing that monster?
Of course not, Lift said, hands in her pockets. That would be stupid.
Which you are not.
Nope.
Then why are we here?
They got these pancakes here, she said, with things cooked into them. Supposed to be super tasty, and they eat them during the weeping. 10 varieties. I'm gonna steal one of each.
You came all this way, leaving behind luxury to eat some pancakes.
Really awesome pancakes.
Despite the fact that a deific shard bearer is here, a man who went to great lengths to try to execute you.
He wanted to stop me from using my powers, Lift said. He's been seen other places. The noodles looked into it. They're fascinated by him. Everyone pays attention to that bald guy who collects the heads of kings. But this guy has been murdering his way across Roshar, too. Little people. Quiet people.
And we came here why?
She shrugged. Seemed like as good a place as any. He let himself slide off the back of the cart.
As a point of fact, it most expressly is not as good a place as any. It is demonstrably worse for...
You sure I can't eat you? She asked. That would be super convenient. You got lots of extra vines. Maybe I could nibble on a few of those.
I assure you, mistress, that you would find the experience thoroughly unappealing.
She grunted, stomach growling. Hunger spren appeared, like little brown specks with wings, floating around her. That wasn't odd. Many of the folks in line had attracted them. I got two powers, Lift said. I can slide around, awesome, and I can make stuff grow. So could I grow me some plants to eat?
It would almost certainly take more energy and stormlight to grow the plants than the sustenance would provide, as determined by the laws of the universe. And before you say anything, these are laws that even you cannot ignore. He paused. I think. Who knows when you're involved?
I'm special, Lift said, stopping as they finally reached the line of people waiting to get into the city. Also, hungry, more hungry than special right now. She poked her head out of the line. Several guards stood at the ramp down into the city, along with some scribes wearing the odd tashiki clothing. It was this long piece of cloth that they wrapped around themselves, feet to forehead. For being a single sheet, it was really complex. It wound around both legs and arms individually, but also wrapped back around the waist sometimes to create a kind of skirt. Both the men and the women wore the cloths, though not the guards. They sure were taking their time letting people in, and there sure were a lot of people waiting. Everyone here was Makabaki, with dark eyes and skin, darker than Lift's brownish tan. And a lot of those waiting were families wearing normal Azish-style clothing. Trousers, dirty skirts, some with patterns. They buzzed with exhaustion spren and hunger spren, enough to be distracting. She'd have expected mostly merchants, not families, to be waiting here. Who were all these people? Her stomach growled.
Mistress?
Wendell asked. Hush, she said. Too hungry to talk.
Are you
hungry? Yes, so shut up.
But
I bet those guards have food. People always feed guards. They can't properly hit folks on the head if they're starving. That's a fact.
Or, to offer a counter-proposal, you could simply buy some food with the spheres the Emperor allotted you.
Didn't bring them.
You didn't bring the money?
Ditched it, when you weren't looking. Can't get robbed if you don't have money. Carrying spheres is just asking for trouble. Besides...
She narrowed her eyes, watching the guards.
Only fancy people have money like that. We normal folk, we have to get by some other way.
So now you're normal?
Of course I am, she said. It's everyone else that's weird.
Before he could reply, she ducked underneath the chul wagon and started sneaking toward the front of the line.
3.
Talu, you say?
Hauka asked, holding up the tarp covering the suspicious pile of grain.
From Azir? Yes, of course, officer.
The man sitting on the front of the wagon squirmed.
Just a humble farmer.
With no calluses, Hauka thought. A humble farmer who can afford fine Leoforan boots and a silk belt.
Hauka took her spear and started shoving it into the grain, blunt end first. She didn't run across any contraband or any refugees hidden in the grain, so that was a first. "I need to get your papers notarized," she said. "Pull your cart over to the side here." The man grumbled but obeyed, turning his cart and backing the chull into the spot beside the guard post. It was one of the only buildings built here above the city, along with a few towers spaced where they could lob arrows at anyone trying to use the ramps or set up position to siege. The farmer with the wagon backed his cart in very, very carefully as they were near the ledge overlooking the city. Immigrant quarter. Rich people didn't enter here, only the ones without papers. Or the ones who hoped to avoid scrutiny. Hauka rolled up the man's credentials and walked past the guardhouse. Scents wafted out of that. Lunch was being set up, which meant the people in line had an even longer wait ahead of them. An old scribe sat in a seat near the front of the guardhouse. Nisikan liked to be out in the sun. Hauka bowed to him. Nisikan was the deputy scribe of immigration on duty for today. The older man was wrapped head to toe in a yellow shikwa, though he'd pulled the face portion down to expose a furrowed face with a cleft chin. They were in homelands, and the need to cover up before Nun Reilisi, the enemy of their god, was minimal. Tashi supposedly protected them here. Hauka herself wore a breastplate, trousers, and a cloak with her family and studies pattern on them. The locals accepted an Azish like her with ease. Tashik didn't have much in the way of its own soldiers, and her credentials of achievement were certified by an Azimir vizier. She could have gotten a similar officer's job with the local guard anywhere in the greater Makabaki region, though her credentials did make clear she wasn't certified for battlefield command. "Captain," Nisikan said, adjusting his spectacles and looking at the farmer's credentials as she proffered them. "Is he refusing to pay the tariff?" "Tariff is fine, and in the strong box," Hauka said. "I'm suspicious, though. That man's no farmer."
"Smuggling refugees?"
"Checked in the grain and under the cart," Hauka said, looking over her shoulder. The man was all smiles. "It's new grain, a little overripe, but edible."
"Then the city will be glad to have it."
He was right. The war between Emul and Tukar was heating up. Granted, everyone was always saying that, but things had changed over the last few years. That god-king of the Tukari, there were all sorts of wild rumors about him. "That's it," Hauka said. "I'll bet that man has been in Emul. He's been raiding their fields while all the able-bodied men are fighting the invasion." Nisikan nodded in agreement, rubbing his chin. Then he dug through his folder.
"Tax him as a smuggler and as a fence. I believe, yes, that will work. Triple tariff. I'll earmark the extra tariffs to be diverted to feeding refugees. Per referendum 371 Shah."
"Thanks," Hauka said, relaxing and taking the forms. Say what you would of the strange clothing and religion of the Tashiki, they certainly did know how to draft solid civil ordinances.
"I have spheres for you," Nisikan noted. "I know you've been asking for infused ones."
"Really?" Hauka said.
"My cousin had some out in his sphere cage. Pure luck that he'd forgotten them when that unpredicted high storm blew through."
"Excellent," Hauka said. "I'll trade you for them later." She had some information that Nisikan would be very interested in. They used that as currency here in Tashik, as much as they did spheres. And storms. Some lit spheres would be nice. After the weeping, most people didn't have any, which could be storming inconvenient, as open flame was forbidden in the city. So she couldn't do any reading at night until she found some infused spheres. She walked back to the smuggler, flipping through forms. "We'll need you to pay this tariff," she said, handing him one. "And then this one, too."
"A fencing permit?" the man exclaimed. "And smuggling? This is thievery."
"Yes, I believe it is, or was."
"You can't prove such allegations," he said, slapping the forms with his hand.
"Sure," she said. "If I could prove that you crossed the border into Emul illegally, robbed the fields of good hard-working people while they were distracted by the fighting, then carted it here without proper permits, I'd simply seize the whole thing."
She leaned in. "You're getting off easily. We both know it."
He met her eyes, then looked nervously away and started filling out the forms.
"Good. No trouble today."
She liked it when there was no trouble. It...
Hauke stopped.
The tarp on the man's wagon was rustling. Frowning, Hauke whipped it backward and found a young girl neck deep in the grain. She had light brown skin, like she was Reshi, or maybe Herdazian, and was probably 11 or 12 years old. She grinned at Hauke. She hadn't been there before.
"This stuff," the girl said in Azish, mouth full of what appeared to be uncooked grain. "Tastes terrible. I guess that's why we make stuff out of it first." She swallowed. "Got anything to drink?"
The smuggler stood up on his cart, sputtering and pointing.
"She's ruining my goods. She's swimming in it. Guard, do something. There's a dirty refugee in my grain."
Great. The paperwork on this was going to be a nightmare. "Out of there, child. Do you have parents?"
"Of course I do," the girl said, rolling her eyes. "Everyone's got parents. Mine are dead, though."
She cocked her head.
"What's that I smell? That wouldn't be pancakes, would it?"
"Sure," Hauke said, sensing an opportunity. "Sunday pancakes. You can have one if you..."
"Thanks."
The girl leaped from the grain, spraying it in all directions, causing the smuggler to cry out. Hauke tried to snatch the child, but somehow the girl wiggled out of her grip. She leaped over Hauke's hands, then bounded forward, and landed right onto Hauke's shoulders. Hauke grunted at the sudden weight of the girl, who jumped off her shoulders and landed behind her. Hauke spun about, off balance.
"Tashi," the smuggler said. "She stepped on your storming shoulders, officer."
"Thank you. Stay here. Don't move." Hauke straightened her cap, then dashed after the child, who brushed past Nisikan, causing him to drop his folders, and entered into the guard room. Good. There weren't any other ways out of that post. Hauke stumbled up to the doorway, setting aside her spear and taking the club from her belt. She didn't want to hurt the little refugee, but some intimidation wouldn't be out of order. The girl slid across the wooden floor as if it were covered in oil, passing right under the table where several scribes and two of Hauke's guards were eating. The girl then stood up and knocked the entire thing on its side, startling everyone backward and dumping food to the floor.
"Sorry," the girl called from the mess. "Didn't mean to do that."
Her head popped up from beside the overturned table, and she had a pancake sticking half out of her mouth.
"These aren't bad."
Hauke's men leaped to their feet. Hauke lunged past them, trying to reach around the table to grab the refugee. Her fingers brushed the arm of the girl, who wiggled away again. The girl pushed against the floor and slid right between Rez's legs. Hauke lunged again, cornering the girl on the side of the guard chamber. The girl, in turn, reached up and wiggled through the room's single slot-like window. Hauke gaped. Surely that wasn't big enough for a person, even a small one, to get through so easily. She pressed herself against the wall, looking out the window. She didn't see anything at first. Then the girl's head poked down from above. She'd gotten onto the roof, somehow. The girl's dark hair blew in the breeze.
"Hey," she said. "What kind of pancake was that, anyway? I've got to eat all 10.
"Get back in here," Hauke said, reaching through to try to grab the girl. You haven't been processed for immigration. The girl's head popped back upward, and her footsteps sounded on the roof. Hauke cursed and scrambled out the front, trailed by her two guards. They searched the roof of the small guard post, but saw nothing. "She's back in here," one of the scribes called from inside. A moment later, the girl skidded out along the ground, holding a pancake in each hand and another in her mouth. She passed the guards and scrambled toward the cart with the smuggler, who had climbed down and was ranting about his grain getting soiled. Hauke leaped to grab the child, and this time managed to get hold of her leg. Unfortunately, her two guards reached for the girl, too, and they tripped, falling in a jumbled mess right on top of her. Hauke hung on, though. Puffing, two men on top of her, Hauke clung tightly to the little girl's leg. She looked up, holding in a groan. The refugee girl sat on the stone in front of her, head cocked. She stuffed one of the pancakes into her mouth, then reached behind herself to the place where the cart was hooked to its chull and tapped the latch. It came undone, the pin popping out as the girl tapped it on the bottom. It didn't resist a bit.
"Oh, storms, no."
"Off me!" Hauke screamed, letting go of the girl and pushing free of the men. The stupid smuggler backed away, confused. The cart rolled toward the ledge behind, and she doubted the wooden fence would keep it from falling. Hauke leaped for the cart in a burst of energy, seizing it by its side. It dragged her along with it, and she had terrible visions of it plummeting down over the ledge into the city, right on top of the refugees of the immigrant quarter. The cart, however, slowly lurched to a halt. Puffing, Hauke looked up from where she stood, feet pressed against the stones, holding on to the cart. She didn't dare let go. The girl was there, on top of the grain again, eating the last pancake.
"They really are good."
"Tuck cake," Hauke said, feeling exhausted. "You eat them for prosperity in the year to come."
"People should eat them all the time, then, you know?"
"Maybe."
The girl nodded, then stood to the side and kicked open the tailgate of the cart. In a rush, the grain slid out of the cart. It was the strangest thing she'd ever seen. The pile of grain became like liquid, flowing out of the cart even though the incline was shallow. It glowed softly as it flowed out and rained down into the city. The girl smiled at Hauke. Then she jumped off after it. Hauke gaped as the girl fell after the grain. The two other guards finally woke up enough to come help and grabbed hold of the cart. The smuggler was screaming, anger spren boiling up around him like pools of blood on the ground. Below, the grain billowed in the air, sending up dust as it poured into the immigrant quarter. It was pretty far down, but Hauke was pretty sure she heard shouts of delight and praise as the food blanketed the people there. Cart secure, Hauke stepped up to the ledge. The girl was nowhere to be seen. Storms. Had she been some kind of spren? Hauke searched again but saw nothing, though there was this strange black dust at her feet. It blew away in the wind.
"Captain?" Rez asked.
"Take over immigration for the next hour, Rez. I need a break."
Storms. How on Roshar was she ever going to explain this in a report? 4. Lift wasn't supposed to be able to touch Windel. The Voidbringer kept saying things like he didn't have enough presence in this realm even with our bond, and you must be stuck partially in the cognitive. Gibberish, basically. Because she could touch him. That was very useful at times. Times like when you'd just jumped off a short cliff and needed something to hold on to. Windel yelped in surprise as she leaped. Then he immediately shot down the side of the wall, moving faster than she fell. He was finally learning to pay attention. Lift grabbed a hold of him like a rope, one that she halfway held to as she fell, the vine sliding between her fingers. It wasn't much, but it did help slow her descent. She hit harder than would have been safe for most people. Fortunately, she was awesome. She extinguished the glow of her awesomeness, then dashed to a small alleyway. People crowded around behind her, praising various heralds and gods for the gift of the grain. Well, they could speak like that if they wanted, but they all seemed to know the grain hadn't come from a god, not directly, because it was snatched up quicker than a pretty whore in Bavland. In minutes, all that was left of an entire cartload of grain was a few husks blowing in the wind. Lift settled in the alleyway's mouth, inspecting her surroundings. It was like she'd dropped from noonday right into dusk. Long shadows were everywhere, and things smelled wet. The buildings were cut right into the stone. Doorways, windows, and everything bored out of the rock. They painted the walls these bright colors, often in columns to differentiate one building from another. People swarmed all about, chatting and stomping and coughing. This was the good kind of life. Lift liked being on the move, but she didn't like being alone. Solitary was different from alone. She stood up and started walking, hands in pockets, trying to look in all directions at once. This place was amazing.
"That was quite generous of you, mistress," Wendell said, growing along beside her. "Dumping that grain after hearing that the man who had it was a thief."
"That?" Lift said. "I just wanted something soft to land on if you were snoozing." The people she passed wore a variety of attire, mostly Azish patterns, or Tashiki Shikwas, but some were mercenaries, probably either Tukari or Emuli. Others wore rural clothing with a lighter coloring, probably from Alm or Desh. She liked those places. Few people had tried to kill her in Alm or Desh. Unfortunately, there wasn't much to steal there, unless you liked eating mush and the strange meats they put in everything. It came from some beast that lived on the mountain slopes, an ugly thing with dirty hair all over it. Lift thought they tasted disgusting, and she'd once tried to eat a roofing tile. Anyway, on this street there seemed to be far fewer Tashiki than there were foreigners. But what had they called this above? Immigrant quarter? Well, she probably wouldn't stick out here. She even passed a few reshi, though most of these were huddled near alleyway shanties, wearing little more than rags. That was an oddity about this place, for sure. It had shanties. She hadn't seen those since leaving Zorfix, which had them inside of old mines. Most places, if people tried to build homes out of shoddy material, well, it would all just get blown away in the first high storm and leave them sitting on the chamber pot, looking stupid with no walls. Here the shanties were confined to smaller roadways, which stuck out like spokes from this larger one, connecting it to the next large road in line. Many of these were so packed with hanging blankets, people, and improvised houses that you couldn't see the opening on the other side. Oddly, though, it was all up on stilts. Even the most rickety of constructions was up 4 feet or so in the air. Lift stood at the mouth of one alleyway, hands in pockets, and looked down along the larger slot. As she'd noted earlier, each wall of the city was also a set of shops and homes cut right into the rock, painted to separate them from neighbors. And for all of them, you had to step up 3 or 4 steps cut into the stone to get in. "It's like the Pure Lake," she said. "Everything's up high. Like nobody wants to touch the ground, 'cause it's got some kind of nasty cough."
"Wise," Wendell said. "Protection from the storms."
"The waters should still wash this place away," Lift said. "Well, they obviously didn't, or the place wouldn't be here." She continued strolling down the road, passing lines of homes cut into the wall and strings of other homes smushed between them. Those shanties looked inviting, warm, packed, full of life. She even saw the green, bobbing motes of lifespren floating along among them, something you usually only saw when there were lots of plants. Unfortunately, she knew from experience that sometimes, no matter how inviting a place looked, it wouldn't welcome a foreigner urchin.
"Well,"
Windel said, crawling along the wall next to her head, leaving a trail of vines behind him.
"You have gotten us here and, remarkably, avoided incarceration. What now?"
"Food," Lift said, her stomach grumbling.
"You just ate."
"Yeah. Used up all the energy getting away from the starving guards, though. I'm hungrier than when I started."
"Oh, blessed mother," he said in exasperation. "Why didn't you simply wait in line, then?"
"Wouldn't have gotten any food that way."
"It doesn't matter. Since you burned all the food into Stormlight, then jumped off a wall."
"But I got to eat pancakes."
They wove around a group of Tashiki women carrying baskets on their arms, yammering about Leoforan handicrafts. Two unconsciously put hands over their baskets and gripped the handles tight as Lift passed.
"I can't believe this," Windel said. "I cannot believe this is my existence. I was a gardener, respected. Now everywhere I go, people look at us as if we're going to pick their pockets."
"Nothing in their pockets," Lift said, looking over her shoulder. "I don't think Shiquas even have pockets. Those baskets, though."
"Did you know we were considering bonding this nice cobbler man instead of you? A very kindly man who took care of children. I could have lived quietly, helping him, making shoes. I could have done an entire display of shoes."
"And the danger that is coming?" Lift said. "From the West? If there really is a war?"
"Shoes are important to war," Windel said,
spitting out a splatter of vines on the wall about him. She wasn't sure what that was supposed to mean.
"You think Radiants are going to fight barefooted? We could have made them shoes, that nice old cobbler and me. Wonderful shoes."
"Sounds boring," he groaned.
"You are going to slam me into people, aren't you? I'm going to be a weapon."
"What nonsense are you talking about, Voidbringer?"
"I suppose I need to get you to say the words, don't I? That's my job. Oh, this is miserable."
He often said things like this. You probably had to be messed up in the brain to be a Voidbringer, so she didn't hold it against him. Instead, she dug in her pocket and brought out a little book. She held it up, flipping through the pages.
"What's that?" Windel said.
"I pinched it from that guard post," she said. "Thought I might be able to sell it or something."
"Let me see that," Windel said.
He grew down the side of the wall, then up around her leg, twisted around her body, and finally along her arm onto the book. It tickled, the way his mane vine shot out little creepers that stuck to her skin to keep it in place. On the page, he spread out other little vines, completely growing over the book and between its pages. Lift leaned back against the wall of the slot as he worked. She didn't feel like she was in a city. She felt like she was in a tunnel that led to one. Sure, the sky was open and bright overhead, but this street felt so isolated. Usually in a city you could see ripples of buildings towering off away from you. You could hear shouts from several streets over. Even clogged with people, more people than seemed reasonable, this street felt isolated. A strange little Kremlin crawled up the wall beside her. Smaller than most, it was black, with a thin carapace and a strip of fuzzy brown on its back that seemed spongy. Kremlings were strange in Tashik. and they only got stranger the farther west you went. Close to the mountains, some of the Kremlings could even fly.
Yes, Windle said. Mistress, this book is likely worthless. It's only a logbook of times the guards have been on duty. The captain, for example, records when she leaves each day. 10 on the dot by the wall clock, replaced by the night watch captain. 1 visit to the Grand Indicium each week for detailed debriefing of weekly events. She's fastidious, but I doubt anyone will be interested in buying her logbook.
Surely someone will want it. It's a book.
Lift. Books have value based on what is in them.
I know. Pages.
I mean, what's on the pages?
Ink?
I mean, what the ink says.
She scratched her head.
You really should have listened to those writing coaches in Aesir.
So, no trading this for food?
Her stomach growled, attracting more hunger, Spren.
Not likely.
Stupid book. And stupid people.
She grumbled and tossed the book over her shoulder. It hit a woman carrying a basket of yarn, unfortunately. She yelped.
You!
A voice shouted. Lift winced. A man in a guard's uniform was pointing at her through the crowd.
Did you just assault that woman? The guard shouted at her.
Barely,
Lift shouted back. The guard came stalking toward her.
Run?
Windle asked.
Run.
She ducked into an alley, prompting further shouts from the guard, who came barreling in after her. 5. Roughly a half hour later, Lift lay on the top of a stretched-out tarp atop a shanty, puffing from an extended run. That guard had been persistent. She swung idly on the tarp as a wind blew through the shantied alleyway. Beneath, a family talked about the miracle of an entire cart of grain suddenly being dumped in the slums. A mother, 3 sons, and a father, all together. I will remember those who have been forgotten. She'd sworn that oath as she'd saved Gox's life. The right words, important words. But what did they mean? What about her mother? Nobody remembered her. There seemed far too many people out there who were being forgotten. Too many for one girl to remember.
Lived,
Wendell asked. He'd made a little tower of vines and leaves that blew in the wind.
Why haven't you ever gone to the Reshi Isles? That's where you're from, right?
It's what Mother said.
So why not go visit and see? You've been halfway across Roshar and back to hear you talk, but never to your supposed homeland.
She shrugged, staring up at the late afternoon sky, feeling the wind. It smelled fresh, compared to the stench of being down in the slots. The city wasn't ripe, but it was thick with contained smells, like animals locked up.
Do you know why we had to leave Aesir?
Lift said softly.
To chase after that skybreaker, the one you call darkness.
No, we're not doing that.
Sure.
We left because people started to know who I am. If you stay in the same place too long, then people start to recognize you. The shopkeepers learn your name. They smile at you when you enter, and already know what to get for you because they remember what you need.
That's a bad thing?
She nodded, still staring at the sky.
It's worse when they think they're your friend. Gox, the viziers. They make assumptions. They think they know you, then start to expect things of you. Then you have to be the person everyone thinks you are, not the person you actually are.
And who is the person you actually are, Lift?
That was the problem, wasn't it? She'd known that once, hadn't she? Or was it just that she'd been young enough not to care? How did people know? The breeze rocked her perch, and she snuggled up, remembering her mother's arms, her scent, her warm voice. The pangs of a growling stomach interrupted her, the needs of the now strangling the wants of the past. She sighed and stood up on the tarp. "Come on," she said. "Let's go find some urchins."